Good morning. This meeting is being recorded. It's 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday, February 27th, and you are in the Arizona State Board of Physical Therapy monthly board meeting. Dr. Bastillo, after you call the meeting to order, we'll do a roll call of the board members and staff and proceed with the board's mission statement.
Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to the February 27th, 2024, State Board of Physical Therapy meeting, and we'll call it to order.
Fantastic. Dr. Bastillo.
Here.
Dr. King.
Here.
Mr. Leone.
Here.
Mr. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Barton.
Here.
And staff, Ms. Crowley.
Here.
Ms. Bryant. Ms. Richardson.
Present.
Ms. Sinish.
Here.
And my name is Judy Chepius. Let the record show that Ms. Bryant is not yet in attendance for staff. And I will read the board's mission statement. The mission of the Arizona State Board of Physical Therapy is to protect the public from the incompetent, unprofessional, and unlawful practice of physical therapy. The Arizona Physical Therapy Practice Act establishes the standards for practice of physical therapy, continuing competence and testing, and defines the scope and limitations of practice. The board licenses and certifies qualified applicants as physical therapists and physical therapist assistants, and receives, investigates, and adjudicates complaints against licensees and certificate holders. With that, Dr. Bastillo, the meeting is yours.
Okay, first item on the agenda is to review the minutes from January 23rd, 2024 regular session. Are there any corrections or additions that need to be made?
I move that we approve the regular session meeting minutes from January.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, let's call the question.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the January 23rd, 2024 regular session meeting minutes. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Next is to approve the minutes from Executive Session A for January 23rd, 2024. Any changes or corrections?
I'd move to approve the Executive Session minutes from January 23rd.
Second.
No discussion. Let's go ahead and
It's been moved and seconded to approve the January 23rd, 2024 regular session, or excuse me, Executive Session A meeting minutes. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay. There's nothing under items four there, and we move to our consent agenda, which is item number 5A. It looks like there's four applicants that we may be able to work on, but I think we should probably pull Daniel Casey from the consent agenda. Do we need to have a motion for that, or just
not to pull it, Madam Chair?
Okay. All right. So let's look at the rest of the consent agenda then. And is there anyone else that feels that there should be anyone else pulled out?
This is Dr. Greer. I'll move to approve the consent agenda with the exception of item 582, Daniel Casey.
Okay.
Second.
Sorry. Any further discussion? Okay, let's move that.
It has been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda items consisting of items in 5A and 5C with the exception of 5A2, Daniel Casey. Dr. Basile.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, so let's go ahead and take up 5A2, Daniel Casey then. Is Mr. Casey on the call?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Would you be willing to answer a few questions from the board?
Absolutely.
Okay. Is it Judy or Monica that would talk about it first?
I can do that.
Okay.
Just pull it up in front of me. So Mr. Casey is a little bit of a unusual circumstance based on the excuse me, just one second. Ms. Grom, there is some feedback coming from your line. Can you mute the line, please? Okay. I see a hand raised, but we'll get to that in just a moment. So Daniel Casey has applied for licensure, and due to failed attempts at the NPTE, he was required to complete a new application. This all coincided with the January testing date, where the board granted approval for staff to grant eligibility based on our system transition. So Mr. Casey was granted eligibility for the NPTE in January, which he subsequently passed. As a result of having a secondary application, he had to, before that application could be approved, it needed to be brought back to the board for review and approval. Based on background question and information that was provided as an affirmative answer in that section. In that most recent application, Mr. Casey disclosed a secondary arrest for DUI, extreme DUI, and so the information was provided to the board last night. Roughly a little bit before 6 o'clock, board staff received additional information about a court date and also information indicating that another sentencing date is scheduled for March in 2024. So the matter, the most recent matter in October 2023 has not been finalized. So the matter is brought before the board. The information was provided to the board in your packet as a late submission. So at this point, it's up to the board to determine how to proceed. But if you have any questions, staff is available, and Mr. Casey is also available.
Do you have a job, Mr. Casey, that you're?
Yes, I do. I work for ATI Physical Therapy in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Okay. As a physical therapist, since you passed the exam?
Without my license, I haven't been practicing. I've been working as a support staff.
Okay.
Pending license, yes.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Casey, we have your response from the last year. I'm looking at your May 2nd, 2023 email. What's happened since then?
Since May of 2023, that was the period of time when I was studying for the first board's exam in the July of 2023. I wasn't working at the time. I unfortunately didn't pass that exam. I started working for ATI in August. late August of 2023, and then subsequently had been studying for the October 2023 exam. This incident had occurred in early October of last year, and unfortunately had to deal with the stress of studying for the exam and also managing this situation. I have been receiving monthly therapy sessions, just general counseling, and also have been attending AA meetings just to ensure that this problem will never happen again. And that's basically been my life since May of 2023.
And the purpose of these meetings are not to make you feel bad, and I'm sorry if I'm asking some uncomfortable questions. And we need to make sure that you're safe to practice.
Sure.
I'm looking at this May 2023 email, and you describe your April 2019 arrest as a learning experience. Basically, you say in that it's never going to happen again, and you're assuring us that, you know, you can control yourself and you're going to be safe for practice. And I don't want to pry too much into your personal life, but how can we be certain that we're not going to be here in a year from now having the same conversation about another incident?
Sure. I respect that question. I understand what I had said in the May email. I still truly believe that. I am taking extra measures, to guarantee that I will never run into this situation again in my life. I understand the consequences of a subsequent DUI beyond what I've already had to deal with. Yes, the October incident was unfortunate, and I felt like there were things that I could have controlled on that day. I am both, you know, taking matters into my mental health and to improving that. I understand that this could be a reflection of, you know, my career. And the only thing that's important to me is to practice physical therapy. I truly believe that I've worked extremely hard to get to where I am, and having not passed the exam twice and then passed on the third time, I had to change a lot of my lifestyle habits in order to be successful in that way. I do want to and plan to continually regularly go to therapy sessions and just discuss matters of all walks of life. I do plan to continue going to AA meetings just to practice abstinence and sobriety. So if there are any other suggestions that the board has to continue to better myself and my practice, I'm willing to do so.
When was the last time you had a drink?
It was probably around New Year's time.
I don't have any other questions.
Mr. Casey, it's Dr. King. Can you just tell us a few strategies that you've learned in some of your classes in counseling that you feel like will be helpful for you in making more appropriate, responsible decisions?
Sure. I think the biggest thing that's been helping is just having some support from my family, my friends, and the clinicians I've talked to, several people in the AA group. I have constant communication with any of those folks at all times. Not to say that, you know, this is a true pure addiction by any means. It's just that I have an outlet. I have, if I were to, you know, be invited to a gathering where there's alcohol, you know, I feel like I do have the strength to abstain, but I also have that communication support and, you know, that constant reminder of, you know, what's truly important in my life. And it is my career. It's my livelihood. It's you know, my entire life ahead of me. And I never want to jeopardize that again, or in any fashion. So I think just having someone, or actually a group of people to reach out to and just, you know, talk to and vent to and just get advice from, it's really been a blessing to have that.
Do you have, as a new grad practicing, do you have a mentor at ATI?
Yes.
And are they aware of your situation and yes, available as a resource to you as well?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
Yes, they've been very supportive, and they had really reinforced to me that none of this situation has anything to do with my standing with the company, and that they still really want me to work there, and they're willing to work with me in any way that is necessary to make that happen.
Okay, great. And then what is your understanding of reporting to the board should anything happen with you in the future?
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry.
Yeah, so what do you understand about what your requirements are to report to the board any future, if there should be anything come up again in the arrest or polo, anything like that? What's the expectation from the board for your reporting that?
Sure, I understand it's expected that I report that information within 7 days in a prompt manner, even, you know, as soon as it happens, it should be reported to the board.
Thank you.
Do you understand, Mr. Casey, that you have 10 days to report any charges regarding this to the board?
Okay, I thought it was 7 days. If it's 10.
Seven's fine.
Okay.
I think it's 10, but 7's fine. Okay.
Yes, I understand that. Thank you.
Any further questions? I'm going to move that we accept Mr. Casey for licensure for Arizona.
Second.
Who was that second?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't necessarily disagree, but I do want Mr. Casey to know that if we have him before us on another one of these issues, we're going to be talking about significant intervention, inpatient treatment, you know, suspended license. You know, that's where he's going. I don't want to derail his career, and I hope he's made changes. We've seen this over and over again. It's a difficult path that he's on, and I hope he can walk it. But if there is a relapse, he should strongly consider the confidential program, and if not, we'll probably put him into a non-confidential program. And so with that understanding, I hope he's going to be a successful practitioner and, you know, he can handle this, but if he can't, he needs to get some serious help.
I think that's wise information for you, Mr. Casey, just to think, you know, we've seen these cases before us several times. And I can't tell you how many times we've heard, the licensee underestimate the impact of alcohol on them. And they're like, well, I'm not really an addict, when there actually truly is an issue. And so two DUIs within a few years of each other and one more extreme than the other certainly points you in that direction. So I would just encourage you not to underestimate the impact of this on you and your ability to make safe, appropriate decisions in the moment, okay?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Any further discussion? Okay. I think we can call the question, Judy.
It's been moved to approve Mr. Casey's application for a letter of the physical therapist. Dr. Basile?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passed.
Best of luck to you, Mr. Casey. Wish you all the best. And if you need anything from us, don't hesitate to reach out.
I sincerely appreciate you for your time.
Judy, are we getting a call from Aaron?
There's an echo. There's an echo.
I'm going to go out and come back in and we'll try it again.
Thank you. We'll give Dr. Bastillo a moment to come back in.
Does that seem to be better?
Let me test. Anybody hear an echo?
No, I think we're good.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Yeah. All right. So we have an informal hearing at 9:00, which would be our next agenda item. Do we have time to move on?
Yes, we certainly can.
Yeah. I think maybe we could go to 11B and get that worked out.
I think that is a great idea.
Okay.
And I do believe Mr. Cup.
So item 11B is.
I do believe Mr. Coppa was intending on attending, and I thought I saw him log in early this morning. Mr. Coppa, are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Let me pull up his information.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
So back to Michael Coppa. We voted to not have him do a supervised clinical practice period, and I think we need to rescind that vote. Is that correct, Judy?
At least it's worked.
Is that still on my end there?
Yes. If you'll just be quiet, we can get through this. Okay. So yes, at its January 23rd, 2024 meeting, the board reviewed Mr. Coppa's application for physical therapist licensure. He's a foreign educated applicant, and the board voted to waive the requirement for a supervised clinical practice period. Mr. Coppa does not have U.S. work experience as a physical therapist. The requirement for a supervised clinical practice period is stated in ARS 32-2022-B6 and ARS 30-2022-C. provides for the waiver of a supervised clinical practice period. So in reference to that statute, the board is asked to reconsider its previous vote in light of the statutory authority granted by 32-2022-C. So it's my understanding, and Sarah starts if I'm wrong, that the board would need to vote to rescind and then possibly vote to require a supervised practice period.
Okay, I move that we rescind the board's vote for waiving supervised practice for the board.
Second.
So it's been moved and seconded to rescind the vote waiving the supervised clinical practice period for Mr. Coppo. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, now I'm going to move that we require Mr. Coppo to complete a supervised clinical practice period. So we usually use 1,000 hours or so for that. 500 hours for licensure. Can we do this in two? Do we need to do this in two motions, or is one sufficient to accept his?
I think for the record, Chair, perhaps two motions would be appropriate. Thank you.
So move that he complete a 500-hour supervised clinical practice period.
Second.
And Dr. Bustillo, I assume that's in 6 months' time.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to require a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours to be completed within 6 months. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Mr. Coppo has supplied us with working facility and the names of clinical instructors that would be available to him for the supervised clinical practice period. And I move that we approve the location and the PTs that have agreed to work with him.
A second.
I got Mr.
Barton
on the second.
Wait, who did the second? I'm sorry, I couldn't understand.
Barton.
Thank you.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the supervised clinical practice period facility and supervising physical therapist submitted by Mr. Coppo. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Mr. Greer, yes, too.
Oh, did I pass you, Mr. Greer? I'm terribly sorry. Okay. That motion does pass, and it passes especially well with Mr. Greer's affirmative answer. Thank you, Mr. Coppo. We're happy to be with you.
Okay, we have just under a minute here before our informal hearing.
With that, would you like to rejoin?
How is that?
Let's see. Does anybody hear an echo at this time? Fantastic. Right.
Okay.
Ms. Bustillo, I know that Ms. Grom has her hand raised from earlier. We may want to address that before we dive into the informal hearing.
Thank you. Ms. Grom, do you have a comment or a question?
Okay.
No, I'm just wiping the morning stuff out of my eyes. I'm just wiping my eyes. I don't have a question.
She's asking because there's a little icon on your, like, on your screen with your face that's got a hand, like you're raising your hand. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
There.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
There we go.
Okay, so we're okay then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I have a script to read before we begin our informal hearing. This is a reminder that the board meeting is being recorded for case number 2246, Jamie Grom, PTA. I'll have Judy do a roll call. Or we'll do a roll call with our name and position. I'm Karen Bustillo, chair and president of the board.
I'm Kelly King, physical therapist, vice president.
I'm Giovanni Leone, professional member, secretary.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Joshua Barton, public member.
And Ms. Grom, are you? Can you introduce yourself and if you have counsel?
Hi, I'm Jamie Grom, and I do not have counsel.
Okay, great. We're going to remember that if we need to refer to a patient, we'll use initials only. This interview is being held pursuant to ARS 322046. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board's statutes or rules have occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any of the following actions. Issue a decree of censure, place restriction on a licensee's practice, issue a civil penalty not to exceed $500, issue other disciplinary actions, issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of specific continuing education. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious to warrant action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board statutes or rules, the case may be dismissed. If the board finds a violation warrants potential suspension or revocation of license or certificate, the board shall vote this matter to a formal hearing. And so we'll swear in the witnesses, please.
Ms. Richardson and Ms. Grom, will you please raise your right hand? Ms. Sinish, will you be testifying in this hearing?
No.
Thank you. Ms. Richardson and Ms. Grom, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Ms. Grom?
Yes.
Ms. Richardson?
Yes.
Thank you. Madam President?
Thank you. Okay, and again, just we'll refer to any patients by initials only. And we'll have Ms. Richardson give us a brief overview.
Thank you, Dr. Bustillo. Board opened case 2246 after the review of a complaint and documents that were submitted by her supervising PT at that time. It's alleged that Ms. Grom treated patients beyond the third visit under general supervision. She created modified treatment plans. She modified the patient's plan of care, assigned visits to the PT, and then did not routinely consult with her supervising PT while she treated a vulnerable pediatric population in the home care setting. The board reviewed this case at the December 12th meeting. Ms. Grom was not able to be present at that meeting, and she submitted information after the established deadline for the board to consider that information. So based on that, the board voted to move this to an informal hearing with additional review of the information submitted by Ms. Grom. A supplemental investigative report was completed and provided for your review. Ms. Grom did receive copies of the initial and the supplemental investigative reports. The potential violation cited in the investigative and supplemental report is ARS 322045, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist assistant, including exceeding the authority to perform tasks selected and delegated by the supervising licensee, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. This case is for your review.
Thank you. Ms. Grom, do you have any an opening statement or anything you'd like to say to the board?
All allegations are 100% false. I'm doing an excellent job. I found out through my own investigation that the PT that had reported this, I had only worked under her for 1 week. She moved here from Texas. I didn't know her. I found out through my employer, Christoph's, I think I can use his name because he's not a patient. Christoph Servian told me at a private meeting that this PT made a statement to him saying that PTAs shouldn't exist on the face of the earth. And this is an attempt to destroy me from a PT that doesn't like PTAs. It's a PTA abuse from a PT. I'm also going to add that when this happened, I was operating really well. I worked in home health and reading and really focused. And when this happened, it was extremely traumatic for me. I went into depression for months. I was very hurt. It was very stressful on all of us. And I didn't want to tell my mom because I didn't want to give her a stroke. And my fiance works in very dangerous work. He has a dangerous job and he had to deal with everything that I was going through, and it's been very stressful, and I have done nothing wrong. I did work at a company that was not perfect, but they were certainly trying, and the lady that came in and made this allegation, I only worked with her for a week. She really doesn't know anything about how I practice as a PTA. I think she commented that she said that I did this with patients that she never even saw. She never even evaled. She didn't even know who these kids are. I'm a certified EMT from California. I'm not just a PTA, I'm an EMT. I've worked for kids with Down syndrome in physical therapy or in physical education for 2 years prior to working with kids. I've been a PTA for 10 years. And I have been doing great. The best I can. I think that it concludes my statement.
Thank you. Would you be willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes.
Ms. Grom, the allegations in this case relate to three primary patients. The first one is YMM. 15-year-old with Down syndrome. Are you familiar with this patient?
Yes.
The allegation is that we have records of you treating the patient, it looks like 5 times without a supervising PT visit. What's your specific response to that allegation?
So when I came on and worked at this company, I was not in control of the schedule. I was told where to go and where to be, and I was following my PT's orders and my office scheduler's orders. And that gets populated every week. It's new every week. It gets populated onto my schedule, and I have to trust that they're doing their job, and I show up to the visits. And they are supposed to know that if there's a supervising visit, they're not supposed to send me in.
So, and I don't want to put words in your mouth. I just want to make sure I understood. But your understanding is you assumed that the supervising PT had done some visit because they were on your schedule. Is that my understanding? Is that what you're saying? And is that the same on all of the patients, VW and then EG as well?
Yes.
Okay. Did you ever question whether the supervising PT, did the lack of an evaluation by the PT, would be something you had access to or something you'd have to ask for?
A lack of a eval?
Yeah. Did you ever notice a lack of an eval or?
No, I saw evals.
Okay.
Are you, Mr. Greer, are you referring to a reevaluation?
Yeah, reevaluation. I'm sorry. A fourth visit evaluation.
I didn't see the fourth visit evaluation.
And did that worry you at all? Were you aware that they needed to be seen every fourth visit by a PT?
Yes. It was home health, so we were calling and we were communicating constantly. Rachel would be like, I'm going to go see this patient. You go see this patient. And it was just like, it was a week by week thing. And I assume that, when the PT is doing her patient and telling me to go somewhere, that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So, Ms. Grom, I have I'll go ahead, Giovanni, if you got some questions.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Okay. I want to follow up on that. It sounds like you saw at least some of these patients that didn't have re-evals done. Can you tell me a little bit about what your kind of process is when you see a patient who doesn't have a fourth visit evaluation done, and needs one before you treat? I mean, tell me what your understanding is of what you're supposed to do.
Where I work now, I have a PMT. It's like daily I check in and it tells me, there's a progress note due on this person. This person needs to do survey. It's organized. And the company that I worked for, most of the time that the companies were pretty organized with that. And then this last home health company that I worked for, I figured that the PT was handling it. I wasn't doing the re-evals, the PT was. So I figured they were doing it. And I really didn't, know otherwise if they weren't.
Okay. I guess what I'm trying to understand is if you were looking in the record and you're not seeing those re-evals, are you just assuming they're not documenting them? And if you are, I guess, how do you know what needs to be done if you're not seeing a re-eval done on that fourth visit?
Oh, well, these patients in this particular population, they don't change. In this particular population, this is the only population, I think, in the sector of physical therapy, they don't have to make progress because if they're kids with disabilities, they're the same, every week. They're not changing. If anything, they're getting worse. Most of them are the same, but they have disabilities. So, what I mean by getting worse is like one of the kids passed away because that's their their situation. But as far as their physical therapy goals, those are not changing. They're pretty much the same. So when I see on the computer, like Jamie Grom, and then I'll see Rachel Douglas, whether it's like it says daily note or says supervision or whatever it says in the computer, I figured that the PT did this visit. So what's in that note, you know, if they're doing their re-eval, I'm assuming they're doing their re-eval. Okay. And the office manager is supposed to be in keeping on top of all that and telling the PT.
Okay. Jamie, the other thing I wanted to ask you about is these emails that we got as part of this investigation. It looks like you speaking to Christoph. Okay. I see, obviously, you writing some fairly significant concerns there with Christoph. Tell me, can you give us a little bit of understanding of what you did to determine whether these Zoom supervisory visits were appropriate and kind of how you, just kind of tell us how that went?
Yeah, as far as I know, that my supervisors have told me Zoom supervisory visits are legal to this day. And I was trying to get clarification because there was an adjacent complaint between a PTA and another employee at my company, between Breelin and I forget the PTA's name, about some supervision issue. And I got a text message from one of my PTs, not all of my PTs, just one from Breland saying I can no longer do supervisory visits via Zoom. So I took that as the board is saying I cannot do Zoom supervisory visits. We need to change our game plan here. And when I was communicating about it, approaching my PTs and my owner of the company, I was getting resistance. It wasn't, it was just, you're told what to do. You go do this. Don't ask questions. And you're annoying me sort of thing. So I was like, I'm not trying to be annoying. I just want to know what's legal and what's expected from me from my job. And it wasn't clear. And I was trying to get clarity and I was getting hollered at. It was a toxic environment from the owner of that company. He was a French businessman and his way of communicating was just hollering. So it was always like stressful to even approach, to get clarity.
And that manager, it looks like, did he explicitly tell you that Zoom evals were appropriate and acceptable?
Yes. And I think that email too, he responds, I've talked to my lawyers. This is appropriate and acceptable, legal from the board. And he says, I've contacted the AZ board and the something or other. This is legal.
Were you ever trained? I mean, As physical therapists, physical therapy assistants, there's a lot of training on supervision and how this works. I mean, were you ever trained that it was appropriate to do non-in-person assessments or reassessments?
I wasn't doing them. Okay. Okay. So I like when there was a Zoom supervisor, the PT was present on the Zoom call.
No, I understood. That may have been a poorly worded question. Obviously, as part of your role, you need to have these re-evals done. In your training and your education that you had, did you ever hear anywhere that it was appropriate for these to be done by the supervising therapist over Zoom or via telephonic means?
No, but I did print the Arizona State Board packet, and I read that multiple times. I read it over and over, the Arizona State packet, and tried to look for somewhere that says something about telecommunications and Zoom, but I didn't find anything in the packet. And then my employer and my other PTs were telling me it was okay. Breland was the only one that was telling me it wasn't okay, but the other PTs that were there, everyone was saying that that was okay. Rachel, to this day, she says that it's okay because, you know, the way she sees it is that she does a Zoom supervised. She had, so without me involved in the, in a kid's plan of care, say Rachel, who has her own kid, she does the supervisory session, every 30 days or 44th visit. And then there's no PT or there's no PTA involved, and she, and it's legal for her. So how would it not be legal? Like for me to be, it would be like, it seems like it would be better to have a PTA there than to have no one there. Cause they do it, you know, remotely. They have, I think they have kids in that are way out in Florence or something like that. And so they can't drive to them. They can't get to them. They do Zoom PT sessions, and then they do their supervisory session over the Zoom. And they do that all on their own without any PTA. So my question is kind of, what would make it less legal for me as a PTA to be there when the PT's doing the Zoom session with their own kid?
Okay, thank you.
So Ms. Grom, I just wanted to see, so there are incidences on here where it shows that you have treated the patient 5-6 times in a row. What is your understanding of how many times you should be treating a patient prior to that supervisory visit being required?
The supervisory session needs to happen every 4th visit or every 30 days, or if there's a significant change in the status.
Okay. Perfect. So on these instances where you were treating the patient 5-6 times in a row, why did that happen? Were you just not tracking it? Were you not keeping track of how many visits you were getting?
From what I saw from the investigate report, a lot of these looked like they were more, fresher from when I had first got hired at CJPS. So I'm coming from, working into home health, and I'm kind of just coming into the job, and, I'm told where to go. My schedule is populated. At that time I was with Melissa, and she 100% handled the schedule at that time, because I was brand new. So. Okay. That would be really a question for Melissa, because she populated my schedule. And then I got more involved in that as time went on, once I began working at the company and figuring out, you know, how to do it. It's a thing with home health. You have to drive to the appointments. You know, people aren't just coming to you. You have to, you know, the schedules can get very, you know, hairy, because you have to find out, these are kids, they're at school, they all get done at 3:30, everybody wants an appointment at 4 o'clock, and that's not going to happen for everyone. And just getting week to week, getting them in, I think they were just trying to keep the schedule. And the other thing with the kids is, like, maybe they were sending me because these kids are young and they have disabilities. And, it's very stressful for this patient population not to have stability to show up. You know, it takes 3 months just for, you know, kids to get really, really comfortable, and you have to be regular. And this sector of healthcare with disabilities and kids is not a good one for PTs or PTAs. I mean, it's a high turnover. People just can't operate with disabilities. They don't know how, you know, to do it. They're nonverbal. You know, and you you work in a regular population and you tell them, you know, go do 3 sets of 10 of this, and they go do 3 sets of 10. It's not like that with disabilities. It's you have to be a special person to learn how to work with each individual kid and their personality and their family. And there's a lot going on. There's a lot of kids that speak Spanish and their family speaks Spanish, and you have the disabilities on top of it, and you have traffic, and getting started, I'm just trying to get through those motions, and I'm just following where my computer populates. I didn't make the schedule. The computer populates what my schedule is weekly. I wake up, you know, on Sunday or Friday, it's populated, and I see where I'm going next week. And then I just follow the schedule.
Okay.
I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, it did. So just a follow up to that then. So it sounds like what you're saying is you were early on in your time with this company, just kind of allowing them to guide you on who you're going to go see. So maybe there wasn't as much familiarity with the statute of what you should be doing, or the ability to keep up with how many patients you were supposed to be seeing. Would you say that as you got further along, then that was something that you started paying more attention to and started keeping track of that a little bit better?
Absolutely. I wouldn't say that I wasn't familiar with the statutes. I'm familiar, but I just had a hard time getting started, getting going, you know, getting that initial, energy forward, and then managing the beast.
Yeah. Okay. Are you still working in the same setting, or are you in a different setting now?
No, I'm not. I'm not working in the same setting because of anything that went wrong. I loved my families and I adored the PTs and the staff that I worked with. Despite having, you know, an honorary boss, I had a really nice PT group, and I loved my families. The only reason I left is because, well, I got hired at the place that when I graduated in 2014, I applied to ATI by my house and they weren't hiring. And 10 years later, they happened to be hiring and they called me. And I was like really excited about that. So I went to the place that I, you know, that was the first, this is the first place that I applied to when I graduated PTA school. So
Okay. That's
the only reason that I left.
What do things look like with where you're at now? Are you always under direct supervision? Do you ever work under general supervision?
I'm most of the time under direct supervision, except for, like every once in a while, Friday night, I'm under general.
Okay. No more questions for me.
Any further questions? Okay. Ms. Grom, would you like to make a brief closing statement?
Thank you for your time. I learned a lot. I'm always learning as a PTA. I've been doing this for 10 years. I've been in multiple settings and contracting and hospitals, and I just learn about, you know, different things all the way. This just makes me a stronger PTA in knowing what to do. That's it.
Great. Thank you. Well, this will conclude our interview and question process of the hearing. And the board will now go into deliberations about what we'd like to decide. Does anybody have any initial thoughts?
This case is difficult for me because I think Ms. Grom is an excellent PTA, but at the same time, I think the allegations are completely established. And so I don't know where the balance is. I could go anywhere from advisory letter to, retaking the jurisprudence test. And so I just don't know where to land on this one.
Yeah, I'm with you, Mr. Greer. This is a hard one because we've heard this over and over again, time and time again, with this particular company, the way they scheduled and the oversight and, the misleadings of their staff and what was and wasn't okay and approved. At the same time, though, it is the PTA's responsibility as well as the PTA's to make sure that fourth visit is a supervisory visit and it does occur. And we have evidence that shows that there were more than the three visits by the PTA without a supervisory visit. I will
you can
say,
just,
though,
you can hear Peggy Hunter's voice in the back of your head say, she should have known better. She's the PTA. It's her certificate. But I think she's an excellent PTA. And I don't think the public would be served by depriving her patients of her service.
No, I mean, I'd be more likely to lean toward a non-disciplinary order for CEUs for supervision and because who knows when she's going to be in home health again at some point. Maybe she will, and maybe even just supervising. I don't know. Are you recommending supervising every patient every day under direct supervision at your new place? We don't know that to be the case either. So. I think it might be really helpful for her to be re-educated on supervisory requirements, regardless of the type of supervision she's under, making sure that she's got all her ducks in a row so that nothing like this happens again for her.
Yeah, I tend to be in agreement as well. I have no doubt that Ms. Grom is a great PTA and she's doing everything she can for her patients. And, that's what we want to see. But it is her responsibility to know what supervision is. It's her responsibility to know, that there needs to be a supervisory visit every fourth visit. So regardless of whether you're starting at a place, and trying to get used to that, you still have to, keep track of those kinds of things. So, I don't think it warrants necessarily, disciplinary action. I don't think that I would go for taking the jurisprudence or anything because it sounds like she knows what the rules are. But it was more just, being overwhelmed or something with starting off at this company and the way that they were running things. And I was going to make the same case you guys did. I feel like we see this company in our meetings quite a bit. And I wish that we could do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would be on board with non-disciplinary continuing education, supervision rules, things of that nature.
With regard to the, I tend to agree with Giovanni. I think she knows. I don't know if continuing education is really necessary. I think she knows that. It just was, and that's why I started out there saying I can start with a letter of advisory letter, reminding her of her obligation of what she knows. I don't know if continuing education is really necessary. I think she knows what the rules are. She just, due to the stresses of that practice, she just didn't follow them at that point or assume that they were being done.
Yeah. If it's okay with the board, can we ask her what the supervision rules are for direct supervision where she's practicing right now? Let's just see if she does know this. I don't want to make a question.
Why didn't you ask her, Dr. King?
Yeah. So, Ms. Grom, what are the supervision rules and regulations for you now in the clinic?
Every fourth visit or every 30 days.
Are you doing home health or are you an outpatient clinic?
I'm an outpatient. I probably won't do home health again.
Okay, so what are the supervision rules for you now in an outpatient clinic?
In regards to, like,
how are your patients assigned to you, delegated to you? What do you have to, what's documented about?
I document in my, I communicate, well, first of all, I don't want to work home health. I work in clinics because I speak with my PT daily, every single day. The first person I say good morning to, the last person I say good night to, and I'm talking to them about my patients all day long. Even more so, even ridiculously more so now that this has happened to me. I'm talking about even the littlest things just all the time. They're probably like, why are you telling me that they're moving from a green to a blue TheraBand? But I am communicating all day long to make sure that that communication is always happening. Okay. So I like it though. It's made my, PT just stronger. And, so I communicate daily about the status. If there's something that changed, I mean, I've always been doing that though. Like if somebody, you know, they're for their knee, but they came in and they sprained their ankle, like automatically I'm going right to the PT. It's every fourth visit or every 30 days, but, I also told my PTs that I'm working with, I told them that I am, having a board meeting over supervision. So you better know and I better know. And I've made it clear that they better know too what to do.
And what's your documentation around your supervisor? Like what does supervisory documentation look like for you? Do you have to document to your?
I just document in my note, I document treatment and plan of care, what's communicated with PT, Stephen Hansen and Jamie Grom. And I just document it now in my notes.
Mm-hmm. And do you document what was discussed?
What was discussed? Sometimes I'm putting that in there. I put that in there every single time that I communicate. So I do that and then I will put in what I discussed in my assessment. So what's in my assessment is what I discussed.
And let's hypothetically say that on a Friday evening when you're under general supervision and you're with a patient and there's not a PT in the center and something goes awry, what do you do?
Something goes awry?
Mm-hmm.
I have a PT that lives down the street. She's a couple streets down from me. I always have Amanda and she's right down the street from me. Or I can call any of my PTs on the phone.
And
they'll answer.
I'm assuming Amanda works at the same place you work at.
What's that?
I'm assuming Amanda works at ATI.
Oh, yeah. Amanda's one of the PTs. She lives close to the clinic, but the other ones live close, but they're just not as close. Amanda's right down the street. Or a call and they have to answer within 15 minutes. I mean, they know. That's usually it. And when I'm on general supervision on Friday nights, it's usually just an hour or two. It's because the PT goes home early on Friday and, they're there all day.
And so if Amanda's not your supervising PT, she would still be the person you would maybe call if there was a problem.
If there was a problem, I'd probably call her just because she's the closest, and then I would call both of them. I'm on a group text, so I would just message my group of PTs, which is all of them, so all of them would be aware, but this one just happens to live closer. You know, if that was a thing that somebody, that she had to come down, like, immediately for,
sure,
that sort of thing.
Okay.
But the other ones could get there immediately too. I think just one lives like a half an hour away or 20 minutes, like a little further. He lives in Scottsdale or something.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So I guess the board, are you satisfied that she knows what the supervision rules and regs are?
I still think that there could be some benefit from taking a course, just, you know, in regards to what needs to be documented, you know, what needs to be done in regards to supervision. I think that it would benefit her for sure.
And most likely the supervising PTs who may not know.
Yeah.
There's some documenting as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You want to make that a motion?
Yeah, I would move to, for a non-disciplinary, continuing education, regarding supervision of PTAs and documentation of supervision. I would say for 3 hours.
I'll second that. Any other discussion? Okay. And what time frame, Giovanni?
I would say 6 months.
Okay, Judy.
One point of clarification. So that's supervision and documentation together for 3 hours, or is that supervision 3 hours, documentation 3 hours?
Supervision and documentation together for 3 hours.
Okay.
And the documentation is more along the lines of what should be documented regarding supervision.
Okay. Okay, so it's, are you ready to go with that?
Yeah.
Ready for the call? Okay, thank you. My apologies, just trying to get all of my notes organized here. Okay, in case 2246, Jamie Grom, PTA, it's been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary order that includes continuing education, which shall be completed in 6 months. The courses must be pre-approved. They may be completed online and do not count towards renewal requirements, and shall be completed in the area of supervision and documentation of that supervision for a minimum of 3 hours. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. Kane?
Yes.
Mr. Leoni?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
So, Ms. Grom, the board will be in touch with you regarding what this means, and you do want your course pre-approved by staff before you choose to take it, okay?
Thank you, Karen.
Yeah, thank you very much for your time and participation.
Ms. Bastillo, or Dr. Bastillo, excuse me. I just, as a follow-up to that, I wonder if the board wants to maybe look at some of these physical therapists who were involved in the electronic supervision. I know we've talked about and looked at some of them in the past. But again, I know all of us mentioned that we had seen this company in particular several times, and I don't know if maybe a more proactive approach of reaching out to these specific physical therapists who seem to be doing these meetings may be helpful in identifying kind of where the problem is here and maybe getting it fixed. But that, I think that would be worth assessing and looking at.
The only issue I have with that is that there really isn't anything in statute that says they can't do telehealth for these visits. So realistically, they're within the law doing a telehealth visit for the reevaluation as long as they're the ones providing the full treatment during that telehealth visit.
I think, Giovanni, the piece about telehealth, though, is that it has to be in the patient's best interest, not in the convenience of the therapist, which is what is happening. And I don't think that's been clearly documented. So yes and no on the telehealth pieces. It was more a point of convenience, what we've seen and heard multiple times from CJPS, versus it was in the patient's it was the patient's need and best interest for telehealth therapy, not just a supervisory visit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Okay.
Well, and I think especially in this situation where you've got a disabled pediatric population that's going to be very high acuity, they're going to have very high needs. Even if it's very consistent, these are really not likely the people who are going to benefit from telehealth appointments. And I think that concerns me.
Right.
Sorry, yeah, Mr. Harris, I cut you off.
We're looking at it from, then yeah, I would completely agree with that. But I don't think we can come from the mindset that you just can't do a telehealth visit for as a supervisory visit, because that's not necessarily the case. But I would definitely be in agreement that is that's really what's best for this patient population.
Mr. Harris, did we cut you off? Did you have something you wanted to say?
The only thing I guess I was going to add is that, you know, I'm kind of hearing two discussions. One, is there anything, you know, we as a board can do to address this particular agency? And then secondly, is it worthy of perhaps agendizing just the topic of telehealth separately so that you can just have a general discussion when it's not case specific on proactive things perhaps that the board can do to help, you know, communicate its views on this new and emerging practice within the profession. So just some things to think about. You know, I don't know that there's anything that would necessarily prohibit, you know, from directing perhaps Judy or someone else to reach out to the agency and to, you know, let them know that, you know, if we continue to see these things, you know, they may well end up with complaints against their practitioners. And, you know, just be, you know, kind of being a little bit proactive in, you know, sharing, you know, some thoughts that if they're not thinking about that they should be thinking about with respect to, you know, advising and communicating and directing their staff.
And I'm not sure, you know, even given the fact that I don't think we're probably agendized for kind of a more generalized discussion about that. So we may have to put it on the next month's agenda, but that is, I mean, that's just something that concerns me, because especially as I was looking through this case, I just thought there's just no way. I mean, given the condition of these patients, I just can't imagine that a Zoom supervisory visit is going well, or providing any benefit. And so that really, really does concern me. And, you know, I was initially tempted to just walk through some of the people who had done these Zoom visits and ask and instruct the board to look at those particular PTs to see if there's some kind of a justification for that Zoom meeting. But I, you know, maybe we can instruct the staff to have a more generalized discussion with them. But again, that, you know, that's my concern is we've seen this specific company, we've seen multiple times on this issue and they're working with the most at-risk population, you know, if not the most, one of the most at-risk populations that we have.
Mr. Harris, what do you advise? What do you think we should do?
I do think it probably warrants, you know, a more substantive and independent, you know, conversation. So perhaps we can just add this to a future agenda item.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Mr. Harris, do we need to do that via motion? And I guess is now the appropriate time, given that we have it on our agenda at the end of the meeting.
Yeah, I think we can wait till the end of the meeting to add it, if that's okay with everybody.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to start the recording again?
I do. Thank you very much. And it appears on my own that I'm looking frozen. Do you guys see me as frozen?
You look frozen.
Okay.
I see your profile picture, but not your face.
Just been thinking, apparently. yes, we'll stop the recording and restart it. And in doing so, I will probably exit the meeting and join again quickly just to just to reset. So the meeting, the recording is going to stop at 9:50.